Hey guys, welcome back. Episode 4. I'm so excited about this one. I'm excited about all of them, but this one involved a little research. It involved me getting into a lot of slightly more technical things, but I think you're going to find them so interesting, and I'm really excited about presenting this new concept. We're going to talk about continuing bonds and how that applies to grief. It's something that is near and dear to my heart. And I have gotten so much from it. It's helped me in my grief journey, and my hope is that it helps you with yours. So here we go.
You just lost your loved one. Now what? Welcome to the Grief and Life Podcast, where we explore this new reality through grief-colored lenses. Openly, authentically, I'm your host, Nina Rodriguez. Let's get started.
Where did my loved one go? Are they okay? Can they see me? These were some of the loudest questions swirling in my mind after my brother died unexpectedly. How can a person be in a body one moment and seemingly nowhere the next? We're often told, don't worry, they're always with you. But what the heck does that even mean? And quite frankly, I find that thought to be so creepy and not comforting at all. People die every single day since the beginning of time, and yet death and what happens after death is still such a mystery. This mystery becomes amplified, loud, and heavy after a loved one dies. These questions consume my existence during the days, weeks, months following my brother's passing, and I was convinced that I wasn't the only person wondering this. Someone has to have some answers. So I began to search for answers in Google, religion, in the Bible, on YouTube, by attending grief therapist presentations, in conversations with other grievers, etc. And this search led me to learn about the stages of grief, which I'll address in a bit, about NDEs, which are near-death experiences. It taught me about Dr. Gabor Mate, David Kessler. I researched about various religious beliefs, about the afterlife, the Bible, all the way to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, mediums, IONS, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies, to Anthony Chen and Brian Smith of Grief to Growth, and many, many more. So basically, this search led me on this quest to find information from all sorts of various sources and look for that common thread between all of them. Brian of Grief to Growth was particularly interesting to me. He lost his daughter, unfortunately. Her name is Shayna. He lost her at the age of 15. And when my brother died, Brian Smith was 5 years ahead into the journey that I felt I was embarking on. Brian was on his own, still is actually, on his own truth-seeking journey. He asked similar questions and he sought after similar answers. He also has a gift for interviewing many guests on his podcast, all of whom seem to have a piece of this mysterious puzzle. And I was on a mission to piece this puzzle together once and for all. Through Brian's YouTube podcast, I learned about the theory of continuing bonds. And before I continue, you should definitely give him a follow, especially on his YouTube. It's Grief to Growth. So it's Grief, the number 2, Growth. And he's just amazing. So learning about continuing bonds has made such a difference in my grief journey that I decided to dedicate this episode to exploring it further. I know it's going to help many of you on your grief journey, and I hope that you find hope and light after listening to this episode, and something tells me that you will. Many of these concepts are relatively new, so I invite you to listen with an open mind and an open heart. Our brains are great at many things, but not great at being open to new ideas because it functions as a filter that relates new concepts, people, and information to what is already known and familiar to us. This means that new concepts, for example, can feel uncomfortable because the brain perceives them as unfamiliar. So if these concepts are new to you, then I encourage you to listen as relaxed as possible, engage the curious part of your mind, and as always, take what resonates and leave the rest. To understand continuing bonds, we first need to understand the history of grief theory. And don't worry, I am not a professor, and this is not a boring class. It's actually quite fascinating because it reinforces how grief is such a multifaceted, lifelong experience that evolves as we evolve. And this is very powerful to understand because we are in control of choosing what serves us and what does not. As I like to say, the pain is real, but the suffering is optional. We suffer when we think things have to be a certain way and they are not. We suffer when our beliefs are so rigid and inflexible that there is no room for a third option. If you've listened to my previous episodes, you'll remember that I always say grief is not this or that. Grief is this and that. And we have the ability to shed the unnecessary suffering by harnessing the power of the and. My mother always says, what doesn't bend, breaks. Life will shake us at some point, and it is our flexibility and ability to adapt and evolve that which gives us the best odds of making it through. So to explain continuing bonds, which is a relatively new concept, I'll first share a quick timeline of how grief and loss were handled in the past and why it could feel so confusing and difficult to move forward when we apply that outdated information in today's context. So stay with me. I know you'll like how everything comes together in the end. So in ancient civilizations, grief was often intertwined with religious and spiritual beliefs, with rituals and practices aimed at honoring the deceased and facilitating their journey into the afterlife. The Egyptian Book of the Dead, for example, is an ancient funerary text from Egypt, and it's basically a compilation of spells, prayers, and rituals intended to guide and protect the person who has passed in their journey through their afterlife. This book provides instructions for navigating challenges and obstacles encountered in the underworld, ensuring a successful transition to the realm of eternity. It emphasizes the importance of preserving the physical body, so in this case, think like Egyptian mummies here, the performance of rituals, and the knowledge of secret names and formulas to attain a favorable judgment by the divine judges. Ultimately, it serves as a guidebook and spiritual aid, providing the deceased with the new tools needed to achieve eternal life and reunite with their gods. So this is obviously based on ancient beliefs, but it gives you an idea of how back then they felt the need to protect and guide their loved ones who passed through this journey into the unknown. Fast forward into the 1920s, when we have Freudian theory, where Sigmund Freud introduced the concept of mourning and emphasized the importance of individuals detaching from the deceased to move forward in life. This means letting them go completely, cutting off any connection with our loved one. And this is perhaps where those older generations pass their belief in moving on, not moving forward, moving on from our loss, almost as if it never happened. 20 years later in the 1940s, Erich Lindemann, a psychiatrist, introduced the concept of grief work as a way to understand and support individuals experiencing grief. He emphasized the idea that grief is a natural and necessary process that requires active engagement and emotional expression. He proposed that mourners need to confront and work through their grief rather than avoiding and suppressing it. And you can already see how in 20 years, this was a big shift from the Freudian method. Lindemann identified four tasks of grief work. One was accepting the reality of loss. Two, experiencing and expressing the pain of grief. Three, adjusting to the world without the deceased. And four, forming new connections and relationships. His work laid the foundation for the modern understanding of grief as an active and transformative process that requires acknowledgement, emotional processing, and adaptation to a changed life. So in other words, grief work. It is work for any of us who have gone through it. You can see how in about two decades, the concept of grief evolved from Freud's cold turkey detachment style into something that is of better service, I think, to the bereaved. Enter Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the infamous stages of grief. Dun, dun, dun. In 1969, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a Swiss-American psychiatrist, published On Death and Dying, which introduced the now famous stages of grief, which you are probably all too familiar with: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time here because this is often the loudest theory that causes much of the unnecessary suffering in grievers' experience and much of the dissonance that society perceives and imposes on one of the most painful experiences in life. The stages of grief were initially derived from the observations of terminally ill patients, but they gained widespread recognition and were applied to various forms of grief. Kubler-Ross herself explained that this was specific to pre-grieving, the loss of a loved one dying from, let's say, cancer or a long-term illness, and not a linear healing process for the bereaved, like most people tend to believe. In the past, grief was often seen as a process of acceptance and recovery following models like the Kubler-Ross stages of grief model, but this came with limitations. One of those is oversimplification. Grief is a complex and individualized experience that cannot be neatly categorized into fixed stages. If you're new on your grief journey, I'm sure that someone has mentioned the stages of grief to you, and you've likely wondered which one you're on and which one is next. And I am here to tell you, both from personal experience and through almost 4 years of learning about grief, that the stages of grief likely do not apply to you the way that you think they might. The bereaved know that we can experience any of these stages randomly, intensely, in a 5-minute span or less, multiple times a day, a week, a month, a year, etc. It is not linear. There is no finish line. Grief is a spectrum of emotions that happen randomly and all at once. To this end, there are no stages to get through. Number 2, universality. The stages were initially developed based on the experiences of terminally ill patients, and their applicability to other forms of grief, like the death of a loved one, is limited at best. Number 3, emotional diversity. Grief encompasses a wide range of emotions beyond the stages identified by Kubler-Ross. Stages such as guilt, regret, yearning, confusion, and finding meaning. And number 4, personal variation. Each person's grief journey is unique, influenced by their personality, cultural background, past experiences, and relationship with the deceased. I cannot highlight this enough. Our experiences and the filters through which we view life will undoubtedly shape our grief experience. The last one is duration and timing. And this is a big one. The stages do not account for the varying durations and timing of grief. Grief is a lifelong process, and individuals may experience waves of grief long after the loss. Kubler-Ross's stages of grief do not fully capture the grieving experience. Grief is a dynamic and ever-evolving process. It does not follow a linear progression, but rather fluctuates and moves and changes over time. It is deeply personal, and people cope with it in very different ways. These stages fail to acknowledge the unique needs, beliefs, and coping mechanisms of individuals. Grief encompasses not only emotional aspects, but also physical, cognitive, social, and spiritual dimensions, which the stages overlook. You also have cultural variations in grieving practices and beliefs that are completely disregarded by the stages, as these were predominantly derived from Western perspective. And you also have external factors like the circumstances of a death or the support system you have or don't have, and the presence of an unresolved issue that can significantly impact the grieving process, which the stages do not account for. So for example, a young person in a car accident who passes away versus a person who dies peacefully as expected at the age of 98 will typically trigger a completely different grief process in the bereaved and what the living have to deal with in the aftermath. So while Kubler-Ross's stages of grief provide a framework for understanding some common emotional responses to loss, they have severe and often harmful, in my opinion, limitations in capturing the complexity and diversity of the grieving experience. I cannot reiterate this enough. Grief is a deeply personal and multifaceted journey that defies any one-size-fits-all approach. It is important to recognize and respect the uniqueness of each individual's grieving process and provide support that is tailored to their specific needs. Now, I spent quite a bit of time on the stages of grief because it tends to be the most pervasive theory that often hurts the bereaved more than it helps. Keep in mind that the stages of grief came about in the 1960s, and since then, there have been others that have evolved as our collective understanding of grief and loss has evolved. So, skipping to the 1980s, we have Rando's 6 R's of mourning and Worden's tasks of mourning. I'll go through these quickly so we can get to the continuing bonds, but it is important to note. So Rando's 6 R's of mourning, proposed by therapist Therese Rando, are recognize the loss, react to the separation, recollect and re-experience the deceased, relinquish the old attachments, readjust to the new reality, and reinvest in the new life without the deceased. And Worden's tasks of mourning, developed by psychologist J. William Worden, outlined 4 essential tasks, including accepting the reality of loss, processing the pain and emotions associated with grief, adjusting to a new reality without the deceased, and finding a way to maintain a connection while reinvesting in life. So what's important to note is that both Rando's 6 R's and Worden's tasks of mourning offer a guidance and structured approach to navigate the challenging journey of grief. By acknowledging the need to face and adapt to the loss while finding a way to move forward in life. Fast forward to 1996, we have continuing bonds theory, and this is the one that I want to highlight the most, as I feel it's been the most useful one, at least for me and many other grievers that I've spoken with. So Phyllis Silverman, Dennis Klass, and Steven Nickman challenged the idea of detachment in grief and introduced the concept of continuing bonds. Continuing bonds theory emphasizes maintaining a relationship with your loved one who has passed and finding ways to stay connected even after death. This theory acknowledges that grief is an ongoing transformative process, encouraging individuals to embrace the enduring impact of their loved ones. Silverman, Klass, and Nickman questioned the traditional approaches and brought a fresh perspective to the table. They believe that grieving individuals should not be compelled to cut their ties with their loved ones who have passed. Just think about that. The idea that our connection with our loved one does not have to end when they pass away. This framework alone opens up a world of possibilities for finding solace, healing, and maintaining a sense of closeness with our loved one. The grief model presented in their book encourages individuals to cultivate a new and evolving relationship with our loved ones, rather than a cold turkey detachment from the person that is dearest to us. This shift in perspective offers a fresh understanding of grief, emphasizing the importance of nurturing the ongoing bond with the departed and finding ways to sustain our connection with our loved one. Through continuing bonds, the grieving are encouraged to honor their loved one's memory while forging a new path forward. In other words, we don't move on, we move forward together. Experiencing the loss of a loved one can be traumatic, and the ripple effect that follows is profoundly challenging. It can leave us feeling disconnected with a longing for our loved one that never, ever goes away. The concept of continuing bonds offers a useful perspective that acknowledges the enduring nature of the relationship and encourages to maintain connections with our loved ones, even in the aftermath of loss, through ongoing communication, memory preservation, and emotional healing. So it's about adapting to missing our loved one while embracing their enduring impact on our lives. Like I say, grief is not this or that. Grief is this and that. We can navigate through our grief journey with greater resilience and find hope in maintaining a sense of connection with our loved one. This approach acknowledges the grief is an ongoing process and encourages the integration of the loss into our life story. So with that said, I would love to know what you think about the concept of continuing bonds. And do you think that this would be helpful to you? So I'll share some examples of what continuing bonds looks like in a bit. But first, I also want to touch on a few more grief processes that have evolved even since the continuing bonds theory in 1996. So a few years later, in 1999, Margaret Strobe and Henk Schut proposed a dual process model, which emphasizes the oscillation or the back and forth movement between loss-oriented and restoration-oriented processes. So for a second, close your eyes, or if you're driving, don't close your eyes. Just imagine with me two circles in front of you. So on the left-hand side, you have loss-oriented activities. And on the right-hand side, you have restoration-oriented processes. Your life is lived in the middle, bouncing back and forth between these two circles. So on the left, you have loss-oriented processes, which involve actively confronting and experiencing grief. So basically living your griefy self and your griefy reality and processing all the emotions that come with it. And then on the right-hand side, you have restoration-oriented processes involving and attending to other aspects of your life and adapting to the loss. So for example, you're having a great time with your family, celebrating a birthday, going on a vacation, living life completely, in a way, detached from your loss and grief. Both are okay and both are necessary. So basically, your daily life experiences go back and forth between these two circles as staying in grief only or staying in restoration only and avoiding grief are not sustainable by themselves. Instead, a healthy approach is to allow yourself to go back and forth between the two whenever you need to. So just imagine if somebody told you it's completely okay to feel good when you feel good and feel griefy when you need to, and also maintain a relationship with your loved one. Doesn't that sound so much better and so much more doable? And it's not going to take away the loss or the pain. But that additional suffering about this is supposed to be this way or not supposed to be this way, and I'm supposed to believe this thing, you're not supposed to do anything other than what is useful and true to you, so long, obviously, as it doesn't harm anybody else or yourself. But in this specific case, talking about continuing bonds and the dual process model, doesn't it feel doable? Doesn't it feel like it actually can help you move through just a little bit better than if somebody told you no, you have to forget about them and move on? The last one I'll touch on is Robert Niemeyer's work in the early 2000s, which focused on the process of meaning reconstruction in grief. So meaning reconstruction involves finding new meaning, purpose, and a sense of coherence in life after loss. With all of these examples, you can see how we see, treat and experience grief continues to evolve as we learn more about it and as we evolve. A beautiful outcome is that the modern grief theories emphasize the individuality and diversity of the grieving process, recognizing that there is no one, quote unquote, right way to grieve. Current research explores factors like culture, social support, resilience, and coping strategies in understanding grief. Grief support now includes various approaches like therapy, support groups, arts, mindfulness, and narrative therapies. Holistic approaches now acknowledge the multidimensional nature of grief and focus on healing emotional, physical, cognitive, and spiritual aspects. again, what I love to see about this evolution is how it includes the and. Grief is not this or that. Grief is this and that. And I apologize for the repetition, but it's just so useful to me to think about it that way. And with other people that I've spoken with, it seems to be useful to them as well. Because then you're not limited to this one thing. It's actually okay to feel all of it in its fullness. So with all of this being said, what are some examples of continuing bond practices that a griever can implement? It comes down to really anything that makes you feel closer to your loved one. So there are no rules. It's about honoring what feels useful to you, what feels true and good to you in your journey. For me, for example, it looks like this dedicated journal that I have. I'm looking at it right now. It's on my desk. And I have it at all times with me for what I like to think of as conversations with my brother. In this journal, I write anything that I would have told him in person. It's my outlet for when things get too heavy or when I miss him desperately or when I want to remember something special with him. The physical act of writing to him is an outlet in and of itself for the grief to flow out of my body. And it also helps me feel connected. And sometimes I even like to imagine what he would have responded. So over the years, I've had many conversations with other grievers. And here are some of the examples of what they've shared that they continue to do for their loved ones and for remembering their loved ones. So I have 10 here, 10 examples. So creating a memory box. Sometimes they do scrapbooking filled with photos, letters, or whatever items remind you of them. Visiting their gravesite for a special place where they feel close to their loved one, lighting a candle or setting up a dedicated space in their home to honor their loved one's memory, doing acts of service or volunteer work in their honor, supporting causes that were meaningful to them, planting a tree or a garden in memory of your loved one, doing events, memorial events or gatherings with family and friends and sharing stories and celebrating their life. Carrying an item of significance that belonged to a loved one, like a piece of clothing, jewelry, keepsake, or having one made in their honor. Cooking their favorite meals, creating a playlist, and encouraging conversations, open and honest conversations with your friends and family about your loved one and saying their name. So the options are endless and they're very personal. And if any of this resonates with you, I would love to hear from you. Is there something that you or your family do to honor your loved one that you found to be special, unique, or especially helpful? If so, feel free to share it with me on my Instagram at Grief and Light, or go to my website and go ahead and message me there. I'd love to hear your stories. These stories fill my soul with joy as much as sharing this information does. So when I heard about continuing bonds, what my family and I did organically, so naturally, already to honor my brother before I knew any of the stuff about grief, what we did naturally started to make sense. It's a compassionate and holistic approach to grief. And by embracing and nurturing these connections through remembering them and their symbolism, relationships, and different actions, we can find comfort and hope, and we can move forward in a more harmonious way. One takeaway from the past years of searching for answers is that I'm noticing that nowadays we seem to be recognizing that grief is a complex process that varies from person to person. And this is very important. The pain is there and it will be there, but the suffering of feeling like what we're feeling or doing or not feeling or not doing is wrong or bad, that suffering is optional. So as long as you're not hurting yourself or others, there really is no wrong or bad. Grief just is. It changes as we change. It evolves as we do. And we can choose to maneuver forward in new ways that may feel strange at times, but which open the door to connection and evolve relationship with a loved one in spirit. Remember to seek professional help if and when you need it. But more importantly, give yourself grace. This is hard, this is permanent, and it can also be imperfectly beautiful.
That's it for today's episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Grief and Light podcast. I'd also love to connect with you and hear your thoughts and your stories.
feel free to share them with me via my Instagram page at Grief and Light, or you can also visit griefandlight.com for more information and updates. Thank you so much for being here, for being you, and always remember, you are not alone.